You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
Straight out of Compton, crazy motherfucker named Ice Cube. From the gang called Niggas with Attitudes. When I'm called off, I got a sawed off. Squeeze the trigger and bodies are hauled off.
It's episode 86 of the Hot Spot Podcast. Host Doug.
And I'm Dirty A. As the name suggests, we're going to talk about a hodgepodge of topics from movies, music, TV, and other pop culture events.
And on this episode, we're talking about a slew of movies, including Straight Outta Compton, Z for Zachariah, and The Gift. You can reach us at thehodgepodgepodcast at gmail.com, or over on our website, thehodgepodgepodcast.com, or look us up on iTunes and YouTube and subscribe. And sure enough, I've fallen behind on the YouTubes again, so...
Who's watching those things?
I might start doing some like flash reviews, like on Instagram, because I'm on Instagram now.
Uh-huh.
And like when we leave the movies, just say, oh, "That was shit." Yeah. Tune into the Hot Spot Podcast.
Kind of like what we started doing with our
We tried to do that, but then again, it's too much. We got other stuff to do. I got pop figures to buy.
Yeah, if anyone's wondering what to give Doug for his birthday, apparently it is pop figures, because the man...
Funko's pop vinyl figures. I'm addicted.
The man is now addicted.
I'm addicted. I just bought Bert and Ernie the other night.
He just started. He's up to like 15.
I think it's 15. 10.
What big difference there, buddy? Last night you started.
It's $40 difference, or actually $45 difference.
Oh, man.
I've slowly developed a little pop Funko figure addiction. I got some. Just kept on going. I got Bing Bong, though. Bing Bong's coming.
Bing Bong.
I got no Bing Bong. And I got Bert and Ernie last night, because they're adorable. Yeah, so we've been gone for a little bit, taking our summer vacation. And if you want to call
just
it that.
Whatever.
But there hasn't been a lot going on in the movies. We got a lot of movies to discuss today. That's just because we have a backlog. But
it's been pretty quiet.
It's going to continue to be quiet until about probably the 18th of September. Then there's like a...
As I like to say, the middle of November and then the middle of December is all I really care about at this point.
Yeah.
Spectre and...
Yeah, Spectre looks good.
And,
I saw the latest trailer finally.
And then that new movie.
That indie sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
From a company called Disney. Which looks great.
Which, if you've seen the new images and
I saw the Instagram thing. Yeah, that was cool.
Oh my god!
There wasn't much new, but it was the end.
I'm referring, because we haven't been podcasts like, but the EW came out with some new images.
That's right. Yeah, Entertainment Weekly came out. Their fall movie preview came out.
And then last week, they had the new image of
Finn.
Finn with the lightsaber.
And that poster's not that great though.
The poster's terrible. It's pretty bad.
Harrison Ford looks terrible. It's
not a good poster. Yeah, it's whatever.
But it's my anticipation is very high for Star Wars. Obviously, really, really excited for it.
Will we ever learn?
I know, right? We'll get to that, because our next episode is going to be talking about Return of the Jedi, and you, me, and Matt have all had similar thoughts watching Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
That Carrie Fisher was really hot in that movie. But anyway, Star Wars is looking great. Spectre looks really good.
Yeah, I think I know who
Christoph Waltz is, but I won't spoil any potential spoilers here.
Oh my.
Yeah, but I think I know who he is. But it looks great. There's a bunch of movies. I'm in the middle of writing my fall movie preview. And I just found out yesterday, actually, that The Hateful Eight is coming out in limited release on Christmas. But we probably won't see it until January.
So it's going to be January.
It's coming out like 2 weeks later, I think. Bastards. It's coming out like 2 weeks later in wide release.
Bastards.
So I might leave
it
off.
Is that a Star Wars thing?
No, I don't think so. But I think I'm going to leave it off my phone.
Why would that be a limited release on Christmas? That's a great
I don't know.
Movie to go see.
There's a lot of movies. Well, it could be Star Wars, but then David O. Russell's movie Joy is coming out on Christmas.
Yeah,
and then there's something else on
Christmas. It just seems odd that that'd be a limited thing on Christmas.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Christmas.
He's trying to get in for Oscars. They're trying to get in for the Oscars.
That's what it is.
But yeah, the. Because what happened was Robert Zemeckis' is The Walk, which is basically the dramatization of Man on Wire,
the documentary, which I'm still not sold on the movie. The
documentary,
the documentary is good, but it just seems to me
I think
once
the movie's
you have that
cool
documentary,
Because the movie's going to be more about the visual.
That's true. It's going to be a visual thing.
And yeah, that's
the 3D with the...
That's a movie that I will see in 3D because it looks cool. But that's also a movie that was... It's scheduled to come out in September-ish, but it's the wide release is in October. Right. So I'm in my thing, I moved it to October because that's when everybody's going to be able to see it. So that's why I might leave Hateful Eight off. But then I have a hole in my schedule and I don't feel like researching any more movies.
But if you haven't seen the trailer for Hateful Eight, it looks amazing.
Yeah. There's a lot of great movies coming out this fall. The 18th of September is stacked. One movie that I'm really looking forward to is Sicario, which is Denis Villeneuve's new movie with Emily Blunt and Josh Brolin and Benicio Del Toro, who is rumored, and he confirmed that he's been in talks to be the new villain in Episode 8 for Star Wars.
That's right.
Another
movie. He'd be a great villain.
Yeah. Another movie tidbit is that one of the movies we're going to talk about is Z for Zachariah. Chiwetel Ejiofor is in that. He's going to be playing a villain called Baron Mordo. But he's kind of like, I think he's Doctor Strange's friend at first. I think he's kind of like a Sinestro from Green Lantern type thing. Okay, all
right. Yeah,
But then
the interns, maybe.
But they're talking about that for the main villain, I think, for that first Doctor Strange movie, they're talking about getting Mads Mikkelsen now that he is free of his obligations on Hannibal, I guess.
Yeah. He's been in, I think... I get the feeling that's almost a lot, as much as I've heard about it.
Right.
It's heavy talks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, for Mads Mikkelsen?
Yeah.
Because Chiwetel, he's confirmed.
Oh, he's confirmed. I mean Mads.
And then I
get the feeling that's almost a given, much I've heard.
Rachel McAdams is supposed to be in it, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that yet.
She's in talks with them, and of course...
But I think Mads will make a great addition. I like him.
The Ancient One is going to be played by Tilda Swinton.
That's right.
Usually a man, but... Yeah,
I mean, more or less.
Tilda Swinton has...
More or less.
Yeah, Tilda Swinton has played
can,
both sexes.
She can go both ways.
Yeah, right. And, of course, Benedict Cumberbatch will be Doctor Strange. Some stuff's coming out about Civil War. There was a brief clip that was leaked footage from
D23. Yeah, they've shown the alliances now. They've given away...
They've left some key characters out.
Given it away, but they've stacked you and how the...
They've left some key characters out, though.
Yeah.
Scarlet Witch wasn't on there. Spider-Man, of course, was not on there.
Yeah. But they've shown you who's aligned where. So.
And there is an image that came out a couple weeks ago. It was before D23, and they didn't confirm it at D23, but there was a picture that came out that people are saying that is the first costume that Spider-Man's going to wear. And it's a very makeshift costume.
Mm.
And in the picture, you can see Tony Stark as Iron Man flying beneath him as he's crawling up the building.
So
it was very interesting.
So makeshift costume is in like an origin type of?
A homemade type costume that he made.
So
he's
new on the scene.
Right. And I think Tony Stark, well, they mentioned him in Ant-Man.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
You're right. They did mention him as the new guy.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. We'll see if that costume turns out to be real. Because if it is... Nice scoop because it looks really cool. Mm-hmm. But people thought it was going to be in the D23 footage, but it was not. It's possible that maybe they're saving that.
That actually doesn't surprise me. They're going to that would be a last minute thing. I think that they
might be saving that maybe for a potential trailer that's coming up down the road. Other movie news, I can't really think of anything offhand.
Yeah, it's been so long. We got let's just dive into.
Because we got a lot of movies to talk about. Let's talk about Straight Outta Compton.
Let's get into Straight Outta Compton.
Let's get into Compton. said no one ever. So Straight Outta Compton is surprising a lot of people. This week will mark its third week at number one at the box office.
And deserving. It's a really good movie.
It's really good.
Granted, there's not a whole lot out there right now that's really catching attention. But it's good that this is getting attention because as far as even with its problems, biopics go, it's a good one.
It is good. It's very interesting because you and I are not hardcore rap guys.
Speak for yourself there, pal.
I mean, I know who NWA is. I know that I know the main guys that were in it, the three main guys, Dr. Dre. Yeah,
I'm aware of the generic history.
Right. I knew a couple of their tracks, but I didn't know the history. You know, of course, it plays out a lot it is now the highest grossing biopic of all, music biopic of all time. But it does fall into the usual biopic traps where like, oh, we just had a run-in with the police. Hey, I just wrote Fuck the Police.
it's got all the tropes. But again, it is true to form. I mean, this is essentially what happened with some glaring omissions.
Yes.
This is director F. Gary Gray.
Yeah, F. Gary Gray.
And he's, you know, he's done, he's pretty established.
Yeah.
Negotiator.
Yeah.
What else has he done?
I forget offhand.
Law Abiding Citizen. I like that one.
Yeah.
That he did.
So he's been around. He's done stuff. And in fact, now the Straight Outta Compton is such a success.
Friday. Because he's worked
with that's right. He did Friday. That's right. That's right. That was the big one. The rumor is that Marvel might turn to him, perhaps, for Black Panther. Perhaps.
Oh, I could see that.
Maybe Ice Cube will make a cameo in. As he'll be his character from 21 Jump Street. What the fuck is going on here? You fucking my daughter?
My favorite part of that is, hey, look, Captain's over there. What's Captain doing up there in what looks like some kind of glass cube?
Yeah, that's the second one. Yeah,
22 Jump Street.
They gave us more money, and now we can buy more stuff. But anyways,
just do what you did the first time around, Jim.
Yeah,
that's what we want to see.
That's a great movie. It's funny. Dr. Dre, he proves the old adage that if there's gonna be a biopic about you, you be a producer on it yourself.
Yeah, you control the information that goes in and stays out.
That is in no way an old adage. Because as has been in the news, if you've been on Yahoo or anything, any news site, Dr. Dre really sugarcoated his past in Straight Outta Compton.
I get the feeling for a lot of them, a lot of stuff was sugarcoated. But in this particular case.
Yeah, I mean, they still had the scene where Ice Cube went in that guy's office and destroyed his office. That was.
But that's different.
It is
that's,
different, but it shows, but it is kind of a black mark on him.
It shows a temper. Mm-hmm. But. Not to the degree.
Not beating women.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
Dr. Dre beat up a couple women in his life that we know of.
Yeah.
He was convicted for one. He pled no contest, so that's conviction. Yeah. And that is nowhere to be seen in this movie at all. There's not even a hint of it.
No.
The worst thing that he does, I mean, you would have thought that he was like, he's a music producing angel.
Yeah, he's almost like the saint of this movie.
Yeah, he drives real fast in his sports car and the cops go on a high speed chase.
I don't know if it was you or Matt that said he's probably running away from beating up his woman.
Yeah, I think I said that. He's running beating up his.
It was a cut scene that right before he was beating up some lady.
He's trying to get away.
Yeah.
Paul Giamatti plays their manager in this, and I would have also liked to have gotten a little bit of his point of view, because
they definitely, which in all fairness, this movie's not about him.
No, it's not. It's
and
not.
And it already runs long.
It
so,
does.
So
yeah.
To add that POV is, one could argue, would just be a little little much.
Yeah.
But yeah, because of where the story goes with him, you do kind of wonder.
Yeah. How much
how
of
bad
this
was he really like?
Yeah.
Was he really selling out Eazy-E?
That
much, or was it more paranoia? Like, which side does it really?
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't really
right.
know.
Right.
So what we're talking about here is, by the way, Paul Giamatti plays the producer who signs Eazy-E.
He's their manager.
Manager, sorry. He's the manager that goes to find the label
right.
that will sign them. But he's really and truly, as you come to find out, he's representing Eazy-E.
Right.
And the band is just kind of, it's kind of a...
They're getting
along with him.
Yeah, they're getting side man.
But
it's almost like James Brown.
A lot like James.
It's a lot like James Brown.
And the band becomes aware of that. And
yeah.
A lot of them don't care so much. They're just like happy to be doing the music.
Ice Cube cares because Ice Cube writes the majority
of
the lyrics.
All the stuff. That's right.
So and in rap,
that is the whole thing. Yeah.
So
where this goes is that inevitably one by one these band members gain more animosity towards Paul Giamatti's character and
Jerry Heller.
Heller and start dropping out, and then Eazy-E finally has his say with the manager and fires him.
Right.
And it's just it really is ambiguous as to how much skimming the manager really did.
Yeah.
He admits to taking money, but in the movie he just kind of attributes that to, look, this is the way this is done.
Yeah.
So we don't really know. So you're right, but it would have been too long and actually, honestly, a little disconjointed to kind of just shift to that.
He actually wrote a biography about
Did he?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think they were really friends. Yeah, and they were really friends.
No, clearly they were friends. Clearly they were friends until that little estrangement there.
The cast is great in this. The guy who plays Dr. Dre is Corey Hawkins. He was good. I thought he looked a little young to play Dr. Dre. But that's because Dr. Dre perpetually looks like he's 40 years old.
He does.
He's ever since he was a kid. So,
Ice Cube.
Ice Cube is played by O'Shea Jackson Jr. And if you know anything about Ice Cube, his real name is O'Shea Jackson. His son.
And it's uncanny.
He looks exactly like him. He looks
just like him. It's so crazy.
Eazy-E is played by Jason Mitchell.
Who's really good.
He's really good. DJ Yella is played by Neil Brown Jr. And MC Ren was played by Aldis Hodge, who's a lot younger than I thought he was. He was on that show Leverage on TNT.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, he was. He was on that show. So, like, he's a lot younger than I thought he was. When he showed up in the cast, I was like, isn't he a little old to be that guy? And then I looked up his age. I was like, he's a lot younger than I thought he was. Huh. So he was much younger on Leverage than I thought. Huh. Of course, the other major manager / producer player in this is the infamous Suge Knight, who was a sociopath.
Everyone knows about this guy, but you see where he gets started out here.
Oh yeah, he is a sociopath and all the way.
That's the most interesting thing about this movie for me, is that I did not realize, you know, it works so well for a movie, but
right.
you know this is also real life. All these intersections that come together because of the NWA, that are still here today.
Yeah.
Like, these scenes are still here today.
Yeah.
I mean, Suge Knight's in jail now.
Yeah.
But, I mean, up until, you know, this still going strong, all these people that come into the fold because of NWA, Snoop Dogg, Suge Knight, just all the rappers you hear.
Warren G was involved then.
Yeah. All the rappers you have today and producers.
Of Eminem.
Just come to a head because of the whole NWA. It was a movement. It was a rap movement.
Yeah. And it was really, really good. It was a very entertaining movie. Like I said, we're not the biggest rap fans, but I enjoyed the music. Because I like the classic rap stuff, like Run DMC, you know, the Fat Boys.
These guys, I'm not a big rap fan. I like you. It's all retro stuff is what I like. Fat Boys. Mm.
I was agreeing.
But I mean, you got to give credit where credit is due when talent's concerned.
Oh yeah, yeah,
these
yeah.
guys were amazingly talented.
Yeah, I was actually, the thing that blew my mind was about the movie was like I didn't realize just how short their lives were as far as like a group.
Oh right.
And then I did
a few years.
Yeah, I didn't realize how. I didn't realize that Ice Cube quit so early. I didn't realize all this stuff. I didn't really know about the group, and it's very interesting to learn about that.
I can't foresee it would have worked out any other way because, especially in a market like that, that's so, pardon the pun, cutthroat, and you have so much talent stacked, it's hard to keep a group together like that.
Yeah,
that can each individual can do their own thing. It's hard to say.
Also, I mean,
I need you guys.
Also, that area of the music industry is always looking for like the next hot thing. Always.
And I didn't realize that. And this could have been played up in the movie more. I didn't realize they were looking to get back together towards the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you're not familiar with the story, you know, they have a meteoric rise within the first year. Then because of that, there's just a lot of turmoil, internal turmoil, also external forces.
And that's the other thing too. It's like, it's the sad story that like, what is it all about? Money.
Yeah, of course
it's
all about money. Of course it is.
You know.
But then, you know, by the end, no spoilers here. This is all stuff that's happened. Eazy-E, contracts HIV.
Yes.
And dies very quickly.
Yeah.
And towards the end there, before he finds out he has HIV, he's trying to get the band back together. He kind of apologizes to Dre and wants to get everyone back together. And it seems as if everyone's on board. And then he basically becomes completely terminally ill and passes very quickly. And it was actually really sad in the movie.
It was. And what I did like about...
Was it Dre or Cube? Which one was it that like couldn't go into scene?
Cube.
Yeah. He said I can't see him this
way. Yeah. And what I did like about the way he handled his disease is that he put it out there. He said, I got AIDS, and he wanted it out there so people would educate themselves.
He pinned a letter that he wanted published. Yeah, he wanted people to know this is an issue that needs to be addressed.
Yeah,
and that's, you know, that's first of all, this day and age, you think, whatever.
Right. That's
but you got to remember, not only is this the early 80s, where
this was the 90s.
Early 90s. Not only is this the early 90s where, you know, fucking still can't get Congress to fund shit for this epidemic, but he's a hardcore rapper.
Yeah.
This is going against
because back then it was still looked at as just a gay disease.
Very much so.
Magic Johnson also went a long way to
get rid of that stigma. Yeah, Eazy-E, he was... you know, good on him. You could tell, you know, even the environment he grew up in, at least you could tell. I say that obviously just based on the portrayal of this movie. He actually was a good guy.
And
he didn't, you know, he wasn't really doing anything bad. He just wanted to make music.
Well, he didn't even at first. I mean, he was just kind of in it.
He wanted to be in with his, just hang out with his friends. Right.
Right.
He was, you're right. The way it starts out, he just wanted to basically produce them on their album,
and then they have him rap on it.
Yeah, and then basically as a bet, they're like, "Why don't you sing it?" Because they couldn't get anyone that was actually working, and that was hilarious because he couldn't get
cruising down the street in 5'4"
6'4"
6'4" He died 6'4".
You really like your rap, Doug.
I do.
He's
terrible.
He's basically like talking it at first and like trying to sing song it, and then they're like, "Nah, man, you gotta mean it." And then he like does it 10 times
before. He makes everybody leave.
He makes everyone leave, and then all of a sudden his sunglasses go on, and then he hits it. And he's like, "That was dope."
Another good movie.
That's right.
So that's Straight Outta Compton.
Check it out. It's worth
it. Take the kids. I mean,
it's very kid friendly.
It's very kid friendly.
Very, very kid friendly.
It is a hard R. Do not take your children to see this movie.
But
there was one guy there. I think that kid was like probably like 12. I'm like, are you sure about that, buddy?
Yeah. But it,
there's a lot of titty in this movie.
It's really a great movie for what it is. As far as musical biopics go, it's right up there.
Yeah, it's good. Another movie.
I said great.
It's pretty good.
I said great.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's like I said, I can't get past that. I mean, because that is a...
It's a glaring omission. The whole violence.
I mean, because like even... Like, James Brown sugarcoated it a little bit, but at least they showed him hit his wife once.
The closest they get here is like showing him having an argument with his baby mama, and she drops away.
But that's because she left. He was arguing. He's like, but please,
that's
I love her.
Saying. But now you know like why she left, you know? Now you realize, oh, she need to get the fuck out of there.
He's an angel. Another movie that we saw this separately, because I think did you see it on a screener?
Which one are we talking about?
The Gift.
Oh, The Gift. No, I did not see it on a screener. I just went and saw it one day.
Oh, that's right. You went to see it, and then I saw it separately. I got off work early. Oh, that was before the screener. That was before we saw American Ultra. I went to go see The Gift. And this is a movie that is written and directed by Joel Edgerton. You'll know him. He was in Warrior. He was also young Uncle Owen in the Star Wars prequels. That's when I first became aware of him. He's also going to be in the movie Black Mass with Johnny Depp. And he has a big part in that.
I can't wait for that one, too.
That looks
That's
great.
Another good one.
That comes out on the 18th of September. Yep. We're going to be doing probably a couple double features that weekend. So it's written and directed by him. He's done some directing and writing here and there. But this was like his first feature directorial debut.
Right.
And it looks like when you watch the trailer, you're like, this could actually be a real schlocky B movie.
It's not. It certainly leads you to believe it could go either way. It could either be real suspenseful or it could just be dumbed down. Schlock.
And it is very, very taut thriller. It reminded me of like the thrillers of like the late 80s, early 90s.
Oh, yeah, it really is.
Like, man. I got like a real Pacific Heights type thing.
Pacific Heights. You like Pacific Heights? That's a great movie, man. Carter Hayes.
So I got
Michael
a real
Keaton kicks it ass.
Got the real vibe like that.
Yeah. It really does. And the shots set up everything.
Jason Bateman plays Simon. Rebecca Hall plays his wife, Robin.
Who was a big question mark for me on this one. Like,
Jason Bateman?
Can Jason Bateman pull this off?
So they move in. They move from Chicago to California near Simon's hometown, and they're in a store, and they run into a guy who says he's an old classmate. Says,
hey,
of his.
Hey, you remember me?
That's Joel Edgerton. He plays Gordo. He's Gordon Gordo.
Weirdo and, Gordo.
And Jason Bateman is kind of plays him off like, oh yeah, yeah. They take Gordo's number, and Jason Bateman's like, we're never gonna call this guy. Unfortunately for them, Gordo heard them give.
Story could have ended there, maybe.
he heard Jason Bateman give.
They were at a furniture store.
Yeah.
He gave an address as to where to ship the stuff.
Yeah. And unfortunately, Gordo heard that, and apparently he has a photographic memory. And he turns up at the house.
I can think why he might want to remember that.
He turns up at the house while Robin is there working from home, and she's like, oh, hello. And. This guy basically forced
oddly, the front of this house, I know curtains. It's just open glass.
Yeah, yeah. It's well, that's, I mean, obviously that's metaphorical too, but it's, yes, but it's very,
very much so.
It's, yeah, they live in this very modern glass house with no, I mean, you can see everything everywhere.
Yeah.
And this guy kind of like forcibly injects himself into their lives.
Yeah. It is awkwardly weird. He you know, leaves gifts at the, which is the gift, because he keeps leaving little gifts that, like, he left wine, just like a housewarming gift.
He got the fish,
and he got them. Yeah, and then at some point in the middle of the movie, they show up at home, and there's just all of a sudden there's a fucking like koi pond, right on their front stoop. It's just like, what the hell? He just like gave us fish, and then something happens later where you're like.
Yeah, there is a and I felt this way also about Z for Zachariah, which we're gonna talk about in a minute. There is like a underlying feeling of dread throughout this whole movie, and you're always waiting for the shoe to drop.
What's gonna happen? Yeah,
it's very, very well done. You find out that Simon, I'm not gonna spoil anything, but you find out that he might not be the guy you think he is. And
but they play it really well. Jason Bateman was really good in this role.
He plays very against type.
Because from the beginning, at the beginning, you just think, here's the protagonist you got here, right?
Right.
You got your husband and wife team here.
Right.
But from the very beginning, you just feel, you don't even know why at first, but you feel something off about Bateman. Like, he's just... it's unsettling, and you don't know why. At least I did. And because I remember turning to who I watched the movie with, you know, within a half hour, and I'm going like, "Aren't you supposed to like the protagonist? Like, because
he's a dick.
He's kind of dickish."
Yeah. So, yeah, we're not going to spoil anything, but we will say that Robin starts to get suspicious about the past concerning Gordo and Simon.
So it comes to a head because Simon more or less forcibly tells his wife, no, we're ending this. We're not going to hang out with this guy.
Because she feels he's like a lost soul.
Yeah, she just feels like, oh no, he just needs a break. He needs a friend. Yeah. No, but Jason Bateman knows more. But
yes.
Jason Bateman thinks, nah, this guy's too fucking weird, and I don't want to deal with this.
Yeah.
And people, you know, drift apart, and so we're ending this. And then one night when they're at dinner, at a very awkward little the dinner setup thing, Jason Bateman basically just sends his wife to the car and then tells Gordo, look, man, we're not going to, I don't know what you think's going to happen here, but we're not going to be friends.
Yeah.
And it was nice knowing you. End of the movie? No.
No.
No. So but that's what leads to the fork in the road.
Yeah, and then Robin starts to feel that there's unresolved, like there that wasn't enough closure. And
little things keep adding up.
Right.
She's picking up on that. There's something in the past that he's not being truthful about.
Speaking
of Simon.
Now, I will say this, because this was the part of the movie that I felt was the weakest, when she goes into her detective mode and she starts to track down people. That's fine, but everybody she talks to goes, did you ask your husband about this? And I'm like, you know what? She really didn't.
No.
She really didn't press him on it.
She didn't press him at all.
And I was like that's...
Like she lets... But, let me say this. You're right. She lets him immediately shut her down every time.
Yeah.
But that makes sense because of his character.
No, that's true. That's true.
He's a bully.
That's true.
And he's able to do that. He's able to manipulate things like that.
I guess.
See?
So, but that was the one part of the movie that I was like, I was a little like,
Yeah.
I will say this. The ending is completely fucked up.
It's awful.
It's awesome.
Like, you're like, oh, this one's good and this one's bad.
Nope. So, the ending is so fucked up.
Look, this is one of the best thriller, horror type of things. It's not really horror, but
no, it's a thriller.
It's a thriller. That I've seen in a long while that really captivated me. And like you said, gave me that feel of dread.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, like hard to look at.
Yeah, like hard to watch.
Like you want
to
be like covering your face going, oh.
Like watching The Office sometimes when you're like, oh, this is going to go badly. Yeah. It's like, you know, that's how this is.
This was a very undersold, underrated movie the summer.
Oh, yeah.
Poor, I feel bad that it did not get more credit.
I think this should have come out in the fall, probably. Probably in like October. Yeah. But it's a great movie. If you can catch the gift, go see it. Yeah. It's really, really good.
It's a gift.
It's a gift to moviegoers. So
the gift is getting out of there mentally intact.
Right. Exactly. Let's talk about a couple movies before we get to Z for Zachariah, which is out now on video on demand. It's on iTunes and all that stuff because for some reason it's not wide in theaters, which is blows my mind.
It's just a smaller film,
I guess.
I mean,
what do you want to think about? Let's talk about a couple movies that did go wide in theaters, but flopped terribly. They flopped terribly. Yeah. But they're not bad movies.
Nope.
We'll start
all the marketing thing.
Yeah. We'll start with the TV adaptation, Man from U.N.C.L.E. This is from Guy Ritchie. He co-wrote the script and he directed it. And it stars... And he was married to Madonna for some time. It stars Superman himself, Henry Cavill, as Napoleon Solo. Napoleon Solo is...
Excuse me. Superman is Christopher Reeve. Always.
He was He was in the military. And it's set... Well, we have to start... It's set at the height of the Cold War.
It's the Cold War. The beginning of the Cold War.
Yeah, yeah. Henry Cavill, Napoleon Solo, served in... he's American. And his accent in this was almost more American than it was in Man of Steel.
Well, and he's forced to serve.
Well, I was getting to that. Okay. He was in the military, and then he got into like art theft.
So a lot like that. His character honestly reminded me of White Collar.
Oh, okay.
Matt Bomber.
He's basically the same thing.
He was captured by the FBI.
Oh, Matt Bomber, another guy that people said that should be Superman. Yeah. So,
his character honestly was a lot like him.
So the. So he gets into art theft, and the CIA basically likes his skills, and they basically blackmail him into, instead of going to prison, you're going to work for the CIA, and he becomes their top agent,
like
basically.
Frank Abagnale Jr.
Yes, exactly. Just like that. On the other side of the Iron Curtain, there is Ilya Kuryakin. He's Russian, clearly, and he's played by Armie Hammer, and he is their...
Don't you mean the Lone Ranger?
No,
that
I don't.
Flop of a big no, flops.
Did you ever see it?
I did watch it. Oh, I did watch it. And it was really bad. I finally watched it on like HBO one time. I was just like, nope.
So he is like the top Russian Soviet agent, and
and clearly, ironically, not ironically, but given that the Superman like physically outmatches.
Yes. And I like that. I like that
very,
movie.
Yeah, yeah, no, no, very
because
much
they do get into a couple scuffles and he is clearly the far superior fighter.
Clear, Cavill is kind of the intellectual more and he's the muscle.
I like that. I like it. They did the opposite of Mission Impossible. Yeah. Mission Impossible, they're slowly turning Ethan Hunt into a superhero. Napoleon Solo has his flaws. He's not a great fighter, but you know, Kuryakin is. Basically Napoleon Solo goes to Berlin, East Berlin, to recruit Gabby Teller, who's played by Alicia Vikander from Ex Machina. If you remember, she's going to be a bunch of other stuff coming up. But she's human in this. She's not a robot.
Yeah, no, not a robot.
And her father is a nuclear scientist, and he was kidnapped by this independent organization that are basically working with remnants of the Nazis. Yeah. And what happens is that the Soviets and America come together and they say Solo's going to work with Kuryakin and they're going to have Gabby in tow, and they're going to work together to try and solve this.
Which was a funny little reveal to the characters in the film.
Like, yes.
That was a bathroom scene.
Yes, really funny. Yes. Which is when they reveal that the Flying Solo cannot hold its own in a fight.
Yes.
Jared Harris is in this, and he's another Brit playing an American in this, which was interesting. And Hugh Grant.
Hugh Grant has a nice little cameo-esque
type. He plays Waverly. If you know anything about the TV show, you know who he is. Yeah. And it's just, it's a fun movie.
It's a fun little spy type of film.
Yeah.
Popcorn-y type of fun.
Yeah.
Which
is what we expected from the trailer.
Yeah, nothing overly dramatic or serious about this movie, and that's the way they wanted to play
it. No real big twist. Any twist you can kind of see coming from a mile away.
The big twist, you're like, okay. But no, it's a fun watch.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing offensive about it.
Mm-mm.
The characters are well played. It's well acted. Nothing stellar. But
I thought the romance angle was a little forced. I thought that was a little forced.
I mean, and unnecessary. You know, it wasn't really necessary. Need to be there.
I guess they kind of had to give him a reason to be involved. You know, to get involved with her, but
right.
You know, to keep have an interest, I guess, in her.
Right.
Whereas Solo kind of treated her like a kid sister, almost right. like that. You know. But it's a really good movie. A lot of fun. It's not gonna blow the doors off of anything. But if you can catch it on Redbox or something like that when it comes out, go ahead and check it out. That's Man from U.N.C.L.E. Another movie we saw, like I mentioned, we saw a screener for this, and this movie was hilarious. Also not great, but it was really really funny.
Really was. Yeah.
This is American Ultra.
I don't even want to try to pronounce this guy's name. Can you got it? Nima Nourzadeh.
Sure.
This is his follow-up to Project X, which
right
was
not
the Matthew Broderick movie, which is a fantastic movie. But the
a big bomb.
Goliath.
I just call him everything that makes me cry now. I call him Bing Bong.
But so yeah, this movie is a very sensationalistic type of spy movie, which you know the plot is nothing new. Like, it's been done before.
Right.
Where it's like a brainwashed hidden agent.
Right.
Who doesn't even know. All of a sudden, he's activated.
And Jesse Eisenberg plays the agent. He's a stoner. It's the whole premise is, what if Jason Bourne was a stoner? And that's basically what it is.
Yeah. Jesse Eisenberg, by the way, plays it excellently.
He nails it. Yeah. His girlfriend is played by Kristen Stewart.
Nails it?
I thought she was fine.
She's fine, but I can't.
Right.
Kristen Stewart's Kristen Stewart. It's just.
I saw the reveal about her coming from a mile away.
Right. Well, yes, but if you're, I don't know how to say it, if you're avid moviegoers like we do, they put a lot of subtle stuff in there to point you to that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like out of the blue. They kind of.
Oh, no, yeah.
She says stuff. I mean, from the initial where all of a sudden she's some badass fighter just out of nowhere, and that you're like, yeah, okay,
yeah. The problem I have with this movie, because it is good, it's very very funny.
It is hilarious,
but it's really only super funny if you like over the top violence. If you don't like over the top violence, you're not gonna like this movie.
Very 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 true.
Like our friend Jen was not cool with this.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Jen was not. She was like, I really didn't like it. It's really not her thing.
The other thing about this movie is it is very niche.
Yeah.
Not just for the violence aspect, but the way it's the humor works in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for everybody, for right. sure. But if you enjoy a broad range of movies, this is a really funny movie. And you know, our friend Trey said it's one of his favorites.
Yeah.
Which he likes everything, but this particularly.
Hey, there's one movie he didn't like.
That's right.
Fantastic Flop.
That's right. Even he didn't like that piece of shit.
The problem that I had with American Ultra, though, the reason why it didn't seal the deal for me all the way is that it couldn't really decide if it wanted to be a funny Jason Bourne movie or a straight up spoof like Spy. It kind of tried to straddle
that's
the middle.
That's a good point.
And it didn't. It wouldn't commit either way.
That's a good point.
Because like Topher Grace, who's really really good in his part,
over the top.
He's over the top. Ooh. But like he was like cliche,
very much so.
Bad CIA guy,
very much
and like,
so.
And you know he, I don't know, he could have been better. I never really understood also why they were trying to kill Jesse Eisenberg
but,
in the first
place. You know,
I was like, why you gotta kill him to save Malone?
Why? Just, yeah, well, what does he have to die for? You're right. But, you know, this is the kind of movie that's not trying to answer those questions.
Right.
Because this movie is not about the plot.
Right.
Topher Grace, and I get why his character is played that way.
Yeah.
They want that comically over-the-top villain for this movie.
Yeah.
For the purposes of, you know, making it, pitting the good against the evil hardcore, But the movie itself, just go enjoy it and have fun with it. Because it really is good. It shouldn't have been as big a flop as it was.
No, yeah.
And I will blame that on marketing.
Yeah.
This is one of those movies that I think once filmed, the studio had no idea how to market it and to whom they would market it.
Yeah. It was written by Max Landis, son of John Landis, and also he wrote Chronicle. And he's also proven
of
to
Narnia?
Be...
Narnia?
Yes.
What?
He's also proven to be pretty funny and knowledgeable about superhero stuff because he did a whole video about the Death of Superman story and how nuts it is.
Okay.
And he has like Elijah Woods in it and stuff like that. You may have seen it. It was a real shoddy short film they made about it.
All right.
Look it up. Max Landis is Death of Superman. And he's going on. He's like drinking like scotches. He's getting like drunker and drunker. He's not like, fuck it. So stupid. He's like, not the movie, but the comic
story.
Yeah. He's like, it's so out there. Walton Goggins is also in this as a Joker type character called the Laffer.
The Laffer.
But I will say he has one scene at the end with Jesse Eisenberg that was very like touching,
poignant. That was the one poignant scene in the movie.
Yeah.
Which honestly, I expected that to end differently. I thought it was going to get turned back.
Yeah.
Comical there for a second.
Yeah.
But that was the only poignant scene actually in the whole movie.
Yeah.
Did you mention John?
John Leguizamo was funny in this.
Right.
He plays Eisenberg's drug dealer. And Tony Hale of Veep and Arrested Development fame is also
in this. Very funny. Yeah.
He plays Connie Britton is in this. She is
she's the handler. She was his handler. She created the project of which Jesse Eisenberg was.
And Topher Grace has a rival program, which is why they're trying to kill Jesse Eisenberg, which makes no sense.
Still makes no sense. But yeah, her project is axed by her because she feels it's
too dangerous,
but because of that, she kind of gets passed over for promotion, whereas Topher Grace gets promoted above her.
It's kind of, Tony Hale plays her ex assistant, and it's kind of like if you know the Jason Bourne movies, it's kind of like if Treadstone and Black Briar were like the two competing programs, whereas Black Briar really came out of Treadstone and Jason Bourne universe. Speaking of which, Matt Damon reveals himself about Jason Bourne 5 that's going to come out, I think, next year.
Excited.
It sounds good. It sounds like he's like...
I did not care for that last one. I'm not saying Rainer was bad, but it didn't do anything for me.
I liked it, but I didn't like where they took it in some
points. I don't know. It just didn't do anything for me. Maybe it was the writing, but whatever. Anyway, glad that's back. But yeah, American Ultra, not for everybody, but worth checking out.
Yeah, check it out on Redbox
really
when it comes
solid,
out.
It really is a solid... comedic spy type of movie.
Check it on Redbox when it comes out probably next week.
Yeah.
So
sadly. It's too bad movies like this don't get more traction because then they don't get made.
Yeah.
More of them don't get made.
So now let's
turn. Speaking of movies that don't get any traction.
Yeah. Let's talk about Z for Zachariah. This is a movie that, based on what I heard coming out of Sundance and the cast involved in it, I was really, really psyched for this movie. And I was so disappointed to find out, not by the movie, because I love the movie. It's really, really good. I was so disappointed to find out that it was not going to get a wide release. It got a very limited release, and it's on VOD.
I know you were disappointed, but I can't believe you're that surprised.
I don't know. I mean, I thought it was at least going to get...
smaller indie film. I mean, this is exactly what happened.
I thought we'd at least go see it at Crossroads or something.
I don't know.
Or the Raleigh Grand.
I mean, it's not to say it won't come out in a couple weeks, but...
True.
But we both saw it individually on demand.
Yeah.
And...
I saw it on iTunes.
Had little points of view on it.
Yeah. The movie is based on a novel that came out, I think, in the 70s called Z for Zachariah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And it's also, the author said he wrote it more for
that's
adults.
So weird. Back in the 70s, they were writing a lot about fucking the apocalypse, baby, man. They really were.
Tail end of the Cold War. The writer who wrote Z for Zachariah, he also wrote The Secret of Nim. He wrote Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim.
Well, there's a different story.
So he wrote that. So, because I remember I was reading about it, and I remember there was like a big title that he wrote.
That guy's got a plethora of ideas going on up here.
Yeah, that movie's fucked up. It's like, let's make it into a cartoon for children. Fucked up.
Yeah.
So, but he wrote a lot of like young adult stuff. And in the book, the character of Anne is like 16. And I think they age her up in the movie.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Make it more palpable for the movie audience.
I guess yeah. But. So basically what happens is there's been a nuclear holocaust, nuclear war.
Which the one thing I loved about this movie is that they didn't try to explain it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just this is the setting where this takes place.
And there's in this mountain valley, basically. I think it's in West Virginia somewhere. They filmed a lot of it in New Zealand, which is why I thought the movie was going to take place in New Zealand.
No,
but they also did film it in West Virginia as well. It
definitely takes place in the States. Yeah.
And Margot Robbie, who really gives a great performance in this.
Mr. J.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, you've seen her in, like, Wolf of Wall Street, where she plays a sex pod. Now this is, like, the complete opposite end of the spectrum.
Will Smith. What was that one called?
Oh, Focus. Focus. Yeah. She was good in it.
She was fine.
The script was just not that good.
Yeah.
She plays Anne, who thinks she's basically the last person on Earth. Because she lives in this valley, which somehow, scientifically somehow, whether it's weather patterns or some of that, was untouched by the fall.
Right. It you're led to believe this is like the only, at least within any kind of reasonable distance, the only functioning land where stuff can still grow and you can still breathe the air.
And I like the shots that they had where they showed like the radiation. It was like the shimmer.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. It's really good. It's really good.
So what happens is she's living on her own on a farm. Her family had a farm and she's, you know, living on her own and she has a dog. And then basically she comes across this guy who walks into the valley, and it's a guy named Loomis.
You can tell he's some kind of a scientist-y type of person.
Yes, yeah, he's wearing a radiation suit.
He's got
a wagon
with gear in it that Geiger counters and stuff.
Yeah.
And
she's just spying on him, and he realizes where he is. He's like, oh my god, there's like no radiation here. This is awesome. And he goes into this. He's played by Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Little Juni Lake.
Right.
Little,
he's played by Chiwetel Ejiofor. And he goes into this little like pond or lake or whatever, and he starts bathing in it, swimming in it, and then she goes down, and he's immediately like, "Who the fuck are you? What's going on?" And
she's doing the same thing.
And she also has a gun.
But she's trying to get him out of the water because she's trying to tell him that it's toxic. Right.
The source of the water comes from outside the valley. He gets radiation sickness.
It's kind of weird from the get-go because you'd think he'd check that before he just...
Well, I think he's... Him. Yeah, that's true.
Given his background.
It's movie scientists.
Right, it's movie scientists.
Oh, this little thing that looks like a xenomorph.
I mean, because we're talking like within 2 minutes of him realizing this. He's like, whee!
Yeah. So, but that, at the same time, he did leave his Geiger behind. But at the same... Geiger counter behind. Yeah. But at the same time, if he's in the valley, he might not... You know, he might just be like, well, of course, if there's no radiation, then it must be fine. You know, so I can kind of see it, sort of. He comes down with radiation sickness. She takes him back to her house. She takes care of him.
I mean, nothing big, nothing major.
It was dicey there for a while.
I mean, in that, like, he's not permanently affected. They clean him off.
And she takes care of him while he recovers. And they kind of form this tenuous bond between them.
Yeah. The time frame's a little odd here. They don't really let you know
how much time
clearly,
passes.
Clearly, they can't because there's no traditional way in this world to know. But yeah, you don't really fully know how much time is passing here, which is kind of odd.
Right. And they form a tenuous bond between each other. And
she basically, at one point, she's trying to seduce him.
Well, no, see, not really. Because, like, he kind of hints at, like, we're the last people on Earth.
Oh, yeah, he definitely, because was that before?
That was before. And then he gets drunk, and he makes a terrible pass at her.
Oh, he got drunk, all right,
But then she's a very naive, good Christian girl.
Yeah, you could tell that
She doesn't really try to seduce him.
Her social skills are extremely small town.
Yeah, and she doesn't really try to seduce him. She kind of she thinks that this is what she should
gives
do.
Gives herself to him.
She kind of throws herself at him, and he's like, no, I don't want to do it like this.
Seduce is the wrong word, because it's not like she's using her legs or anything.
Right.
You're right. She gives himself.
right.
willingly over to him right. as if to say, almost like Amish style, like,
yes.
I am your partner yeah. now that we must lay
yeah.
together.
Yeah. And he's like, no, I don't want it like that. That's not, you know, that's...
Right. We got all the time in the world to figure exactly. this out.
Right. Then somebody else comes and along.
Then enter Caleb, played by Chris Pine.
Chris Pine.
Who comes in immediately sketchballs.
Yeah.
Immediately just yeah. looking all kinds of sketchy.
He totally sketched.
Just looking all kinds of weird.
And this is what I was talking about with the gift, where this is where it's... Because even Chiwetel Ejiofor, you're not really totally sure about him either.
Yeah.
Because and then once Chris Pine comes into it, that feeling of dread settles
so
in.
So he comes in with the remnants of some kind of suit. It clearly wasn't the same kind of what do you want to call it? The same kind of
yeah.
get up that
Chiwetel
had.
Because Loomis's suit was like he built it. Like it was like
funny that this one's like orange. It gives you.
I immediately thought that. Too? I immediately thought prison. Well,
clearly, that's what they wanted. That yeah. was the imagery there. Yeah. Like, oh, this was like a prison jumpsuit type yeah. of thing because he's got like tied around his waist. Yeah. But that was, of course, that was imagery there. But it was some form of a radiation suit.
Right.
He was walking around in.
Right.
And it's the other odd thing is you're first introduced to him without being introduced to him at all. He's like, right. I'm a spying on her.
Right.
And then he just walks away.
Yeah.
And then she happens upon him. She happens upon him like the next day or
a couple days later.
But clearly he was ready for it. He was.
Yeah.
This is when he wanted
right.
to be found by her.
Right.
Because he was not surprised at all. Like he was sitting there waiting for her basically.
Yeah.
Like, oh, how you doing?
Yeah. He is, so while Loomis is, like, more, like, you know, urbane, and he's, like, you know, a scientist and, you know, all this stuff, this guy, Caleb, is much more Anne's speed.
Yeah.
He is...
Well, I wouldn't even say that. I would say...
Oh, no. Well, I mean, like, he's very much similar to her, much more, you know, they're as far as their backgrounds.
Maybe a little bit. He's definitely more worldly. He's not as naive.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't have
He doesn't
no.
have the naive,
but I mean, but he's
naivete.
But he's a Southern guy.
Right. Correct.
And they
right.
Have,
no, right.
Know, they have their beliefs.
They have their common
that,
points,
yeah.
but this guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
I mean, he's from the get-go, he's trying to woo her a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And basically what happens is she invites him back to the house, and of course Loomis is immediately like,
immediately to the point of like, I was curious as to how Loomis even knew they were walking up that quickly. Like, they come walking up the drive, and Loomis runs out the door with a shotgun, like,
yeah.
already pointed at the guy.
Yeah.
And this is where, for me, the way I took it, maybe it's not the way it was intended, and you, clearly, we've discussed this,
yeah.
you didn't take it the same way. This is where I started to throw my little bit of doubt on Loomis.
Right.
Like, maybe this guy is not everything I thought he was. Because up to this point, he's already been, I'll use the word shady, in that he hasn't been upfront with her about his past.
About certain things.
He's evaded certain questions about his past. Mm. And now all of a sudden, you know, here he is clearly, and I'm not saying unrightfully so, you know, he's trying to protect
right.
what they've had. And this again goes towards, I don't know how long they've been together.
Right.
It's unclear
right,
to
yeah.
me. But he's clearly he's got his protective instinct then.
Right.
Even though at one point he was the same guy.
Right.
You know, he was the yeah. one being brought in for shelter.
Right.
So anyway, that was my take on that scene.
Basically, I saw an interview with Chiwetel Ejiofor, and he talked about, it was on Rotten Tomatoes, and he talked about how, he's like, it basically breaks it down to how people are two different people. There's hunter-gatherers and there's sedentary people. And he's a sedentary person. She's a hunter-gatherer. And he said hunter-gatherers, when they see evidence of human, you know, presence, or like they get optimistic. They're like, oh, there's other humans here. We might be able to do something here.
Yeah.
Whereas sedentary people are more like, when other people, strangers come in, they go, what do you want from me?
Closed off.
Like, what do you want from yeah. me? What are you trying to take? What are you trying to do? And so that's kind of how, he's like, that's how I played it. That's how we kind of played it. And I can understand where he was coming from. I can see where you're coming from, though, too. That would make you feel a little sketch. Because this whole thing is very much a Garden of Eden
yeah.
Parable. And
clearly.
And he doesn't, you know, this is paradise. And he's like, who is this guy coming into my paradise here now? Who is this guy?
I mean, Caleb is, you know, that's even goes further. That's a biblical name.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We won't ruin what happens at the end.
This is really hard to really fully talk about the characterizations of these people without getting to the end.
Right. But as soon as Chris Pine shows up, you get that tension in there where you're just like, something's going
to
happen.
And by the way, it takes a while for him to show up. We're talking halfway through the movie.
Yeah, it's a slow burn.
Before he shows up, we're 45 minutes into the movie before he shows up.
And basically what happens is that Loomis has an idea for a project to use the radioactive water, because there's like a little waterfall there, and he wants to build basically like a water wheel to generate hydropower to charge a generator
to get power
to the house.
But the snag is that the only available building materials for this is a small church that
Anne's father
had built, and that she basically daily went there for communion. She played her organ, she prayed.
Right.
And so she did not want to give this up.
Right.
And Loomis initially tried to rationalize with her, but, you know, not forcibly so.
Right.
And then eventually just says, hey, we can make do without it for now.
Yeah.
And gives her way, more or less. And then once Chris Pine comes in.
Asshole Caleb comes in.
Caleb comes in and flips the script.
Yeah.
And basically smooth talks Anne into, you know, hey, we're going to do this. And almost takes the project for his own. But they work together, clearly. They're all working together to get this done. And all throughout there are scenes of, you know, Caleb stealing glances from Anne and Anne stealing glances from Caleb, all while Loomis is kind of, you know, sitting on the side going, I see what's going on here.
Yeah.
And then it comes to a head. One evening, Loomis pulls her aside and says, look, I know what's going on here. I'm not stupid. And, you know, as if he had the right. He's like, but I give you permission to pursue this.
Yeah.
Clearly, you know, I get it. And then this is when you really start to seep into his head just a little bit.
Mm.
He turns it into a racial thing.
Yeah.
He says, you know, something to the effect of, I can see color. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, yeah, this guy's not okay with this. And he is trying, you know, desperately to hold on to his own mind.
Yeah.
But she does not immediately give in to that.
Right. Okay. We don't want to give away the whole story.
I mean, that's just the tension. I mean, that's not the story.
But I liked it a lot. I liked it a whole lot. It's one of the better movies this summer for me.
Yeah, I haven't gone through my summer list yet, so I'm not sure that this would crack a top five for me.
It probably won't. No, it wouldn't crack my top three.
It is a good movie. It's certainly a well made movie.
Yeah.
For me, this was a lot like for me just the way I was watching it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot like, what is that movie Tom Hardy was in? I can't remember the name of it.
Lock.
Where he's just driving the car, basically. Yeah. And it's a really good movie, but I was not ready or expecting it. With this movie, I was expecting more action? External tension.
Right.
Where this movie was a giant character study. This was a study in humans.
Yeah.
A study in the human development and the human mind. And,
yeah.
And all that stuff, but it's really well made, and it has great selling points for me in that, you know, the mere fact that they didn't try to explain the apocalypse, like they didn't spend some 5 minute, exposition trying to explain why this was or because it's irrelevant. This is the scenery. This is the backdrop for this story taking place.
Right,
it could have been anything.
Right,
but yeah, it was. It was a good movie for sure, and the acting was really good. Chris Pine.
Yeah,
I mean, I knew Ejiofor was gonna be great.
Yeah,
Chris Pine, I typically see in more actiony or lighter roles. I think
they
did a really good.
Yeah, he was good. They were all three of them were great. Definitely check out Z for Zachariah if you can. You got to find it. Just go to iTunes. I think it might be on Google too.
Yeah.
It's also on video on demand on cable.
I need to rewatch it again because clearly there are within a lot of the dialogue. There is a lot of religious symbolism
mm-hmm.
that leads to the end, to mm-hmm. the climax of the end, and I would like to kind of pick that apart a little more. This is one of those movies that honestly I like to discuss more than I like to watch.
Right.
It's funner to discuss a movie like this.
Right.
But yeah, it's a really solid movie.
Real quick, you mentioned Tom Hardy. He's going to be doing, with his director from Locke, the writer-director from Locke, he's actually going to do a TV show. I think it's for FX.
Is he on a bicycle this time?
No. I cannot remember the name of it, but it's...
So he's doing a TV show, huh?
Yeah. Hmm. It's
funny. It's funny how these cycles go, right?
Yeah.
Actors...
Yeah,
big screen actors.
Well, but that's the thing. Like Tom Hardy doesn't really follow anybody's rules anyway, so he just does what he wants.
I'm not saying that it's a bad thing, but
yeah.
it's just funny to see this progression of all these big timers.
I think it's gonna be on FX, all right. If I'm not mistaken.
I'll have to look for that.
I'll look it up before our next episode, and that'll do it for this episode of the Hodgepodge Podcast.
So let's run them down.
Straight
Outta Compton, excellent biopic. Oh, false. But still solid. Okay, solid biopic.
It's very good.
It's a great biopic.
It's very good.
The Gift. Great thriller. I mean,
great thriller.
See it.
Definitely see it.
American Ultra, a solid effort by a follow up for this director. Just very niche.
Yeah.
Very niche market. And Z for Zachary.
You forgot Man from Uncle.
I did forget. Yeah. Man from Uncle, again.
So did movie goers.
Solid popcorn.
Yeah.
Spy type of movie.
Z for Zachariah. Definitely check that out.
You know, it's as far as indie movies go, especially,
yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah. Next episode, we will have author Matt King back to discuss Return of the Jedi.
Do we have to?
I guess.
Oh.
But that'll be next time, and we'll see you then. Thanks for listening.
I'm expressing with my full capabilities, and now I'm living in correctional facilities. Cause some don't agree with how I do this. I get straight and meditate like a Buddhist. I'm dropping flavor, my behavior is hereditary. But my technique is very necessary. Blame it on Ice Cube, because he said it gets funky when you got a subject and a prayer.